got the overhead. In March, I had the privilege of teaching some sessions to some of our campers who had become Christians, and we're trying to disciple them until we can get them into church. And so I was going to share one of the sessions that I had with the kids with you guys, because I thought it was a really good one. The chapter was 1 Corinthians 13, and the first session was on the difference between religion, living according to rules and the things you do, and relationship or adoption, having a relationship with the living God. Ooh, that went backwards then. What happened? Are you on March or May? Wow, this is totally not the right one. Okay, go to the other one, because this is not the right one. The third one was, the third session was on the difference between faith and magical thinking. The difference between having faith in a solid, real God and wanting to have faith in a genie that if you do the right things, he will grant all your wishes and make your life all happy and perfect and great. And the fourth session was on the difference between love and selfishness. The difference, and those are exact opposites. Love is what you do to others. It's something you give out. And selfishness is what you're trying to get in. But I want to talk to you about the second message that we did that day. And it was on hope. Because 1 Corinthians 13 is called the love chapter. But I think it's really important to when I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. But when I grew up, oh, that's right. You don't have my zip drive. Yeah, it's right there. It's on my keys. But when I grew up, at least knowing that your son was happy and not in too much trouble. Now, the problem is that I'm not very good at baseball. As much as I loved it, as much as I wanted to be the best in the world, I'm not very good at throwing. I'm not good at hitting. And my fielding is only average. And as I started to get to be 12 years old, it occurred to me that if I wasn't anywhere near the best baseball player in a small town, I was probably not going to be the best baseball player in the world. But I was good at running. So I put all my effort into being a good runner. And I am a good runner. But when I moved to Saskatoon when I was 15 and joined Saskatoon Track Club and traveled around racing, I had the privilege of having a teammate who broke the record in every event in our age group in the country. So I had the privilege of running with the best runner in the country, which was very good because I realized pretty quickly that I was never going to be the best. I wasn't anywhere near as good as this guy, but I loved running, and I kept running. And I tried to put my efforts into being an excellent, really excellent curler. And I think our team was probably the second best youth team in Saskatchewan in 1977. But even if we would have been the best, even if somehow I would have got hooked up with some really, really good guys, and we would have become the best curlers in the country, what then? Seriously. All you can do is hold on until somebody else comes along and beats you, and it's better. And the interesting thing about being a young person is that you figure this out slowly, that what you want, what you hope for, isn't necessarily going to happen. And I was quite lucky to learn that fairly quickly, and decided to have different priorities in life. But in terms of talking today, I wanted to, I was thinking about what happens, because I've got some skills, some gifts, I'm good at some things. What happens if, for the people that aren't good at anything, they're not smart, they're not good looking, they're not good at athletics, their hope, their desire to make some impact in the world is really unrealistic. And what would it be like to be somebody like that? And while Kevin's still working on the pictures, I'm going to tell you a couple stories. One summer in camp, I'm going to tell about two different cabins, but one summer in camp, we had a boy named Paul. All these names are made up because I don't give real names. But the group that sent him to us warned us beforehand. See, he was in a special program to keep him out of the system because his life was like right on the edge. And he was a 12-year-old boy, and he had eyes that kind of darted all the time. And things were going kind of okay until we had him in the cabin, and we were going to like tell the kids the rules and stuff like that. And he went out the back window through the screen and kind of ran away. And they went looking for him, and they radioed me, and we went looking for him. We caught him and found him and brought him back and stuff like that. And every time he had to be somewhere, he would run away. And so it got to be that I got to run after him, because I love running, and I can run after a 12-year-old all day long. And one time I decided not to catch him, just to run to see how long he would keep running. And we'd run and ran and ran and ran, and finally when he got tired, we sat down. Now normally when I'm trying to calm down a kid, I kind of put him in a basket hold and hold him until he can calm down. But this kid wasn't mad at me. There's no anger, anything. So I sort of sat him facing me, and I looked into his eyes, and I do what I normally do. I pray, God, tell me, you know, how do you see this kid? Let me see him with your eyes so I can understand him like you do. And I looked into his eyes, and this has only happened to me two other times in my life. There was nothing on the other side. There was nothing. And that's a scary thing. And so I talked to the boy to try to figure out what his life was kind of like. And when he'd go out, he lives in Elmwood, when he'd go outside and play or whatever, he'd always get in trouble. And his single mom helped him in this by keeping him locked in a room in the basement. And when it was time to go for school, he was walked onto the bus, went to a special classroom where he was watched all the time. At the end of school, he'd be walked to the bus and home and into a locked room in his basement. And his mom loved him but didn't know what to do with him. And her boyfriend was continually telling her to get rid of him. He's just trouble. This is what I saw when I looked into his eyes. And I told him about Jesus. And I told him about how he can set him free. And I didn't see any effect. And I want to tell you that it isn't always just like, wee, miracles. It doesn't work that way. I think it was 2 weeks later, we had another cabin group, and this group was also very interesting. There's three kids I want to tell you about. The first one was named Sean. He was a 13-year-old, fairly big boy, and he was a scapegoat, which means that basically anybody older than him, he would bug them until they'd beat him up. And anybody younger than him, he'd bug them until they'd cry. So he was in the middle of absolute problems all the time. And the cabin leaders are just like tearing out the hair. What do we do with this kid? We need to send him home because he's just a pain. And I'm saying, you need to love him because he really, really needs love. And what about his brother? Oh, his brother's fine. He doesn't cause any problems at all. Yeah? His brother, we'll call him Chris. Okay, we'll call him Chris. 11 going on 12, completely silent, never said anything. He wasn't any problems at all. See, their family, these kids, were beaten regularly. And Sean was just reaching out continually for anybody to accept him, unconditional acceptance. His brother, who wasn't causing any problems at all, was in a worse state because he'd given up and all he wanted to do was hide and have nobody notice him so he wouldn't have any more pain in his life. The good thing is, in that cabin, there's another boy. Okay, we'll call him Duke. Okay, Duke was a 13-year-old boy who was about 220 pounds. Okay? And mentally handicapped and not very good looking, and he was picked on all the time in school. But the bad thing is, his mother was continually telling him how stupid he was, how useless he was, and blah, 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 blah. And so he wasn't didn't have a terribly good sense of self-esteem. But when he, what do they call the younger boy?
Chris.
When he saw Chris, he saw somebody that was kind of safe because Chris wasn't going to say anything bad about him or to him or anything else. So they kind of buddied up and they did everything together. And Chris liked it because this big guy was as gentle as possibly could be. And together, they were having a really good time at camp. And I was just like, yes. We were dealing with the other boy all the time, all the time, all the time. But these guys were doing good, doing good, doing good, until, and everybody's going to go, oh, until the shooting. I was in a session with my LDPs, our leadership development program, and I hear, Don, come quick, there's been a shooting. I'm like, what? That kind of stuff doesn't happen at camp. What happened is one of the 12-year-old boys had smuggled a pellet gun into the camp. We'd heard rumors of it, searched everything, realized it wasn't true, and that day another boy had got it, poked it through the screen of the cabin, and shot, guess who? Sean, because he was the center of all things going on in the camp, shot him. And now all of a sudden, everything was in an uproar. I had to send two boys home, the boy that brought the gun and the boy that shot the gun, and deal with the parents who were, why are you sending them home? And the cabin leaders had to deal with these kids who were somewhat upset with this happening at camp. Kids that regularly dealt with horrible things, camp being a safe place, and all of a sudden that being shattered in front of them. And Sean was very understandably upset, but his brother shut down completely because he was just starting to feel safe, and now all of a sudden that was just gone. So the cabin leaders were really trying to comfort them, really trying to show them, not by words, but by everything they did, about how much God loved them, and that, you know what? Garbage happens in the world, but God's there. And they did not reach Chris, but they did totally reach Duke. About 20 minutes later, he comes whipping into the dining hall, gives me a great big hug, and then tells me about Jesus, tells me about he became a Christian, and tells me about how I can become a Christian. This is a mentally handicapped boy, mentally about 9 years old, and it was just, the excitement just poured out of him, okay? And then, over the last day and a half of camp, he went and told every single other staff and child the same thing. It was annoying. And the interesting thing was, why was it annoying that this kid was telling everybody about how that he was a Christian and they should be too? Because we don't get it. Like, this kid, really, his outside circumstances didn't change. He was going home to a mom when he told his mom about how great it was to be a Christian, was still going to put him down. Outside circumstances didn't change at all, but inside, everything had changed. Because now he wasn't going to believe it. He knew. He met God, and he knew God was real, and everything had changed. And the other three boys I was talking about so far, their outside circumstances didn't change either. But because they didn't have that hope, that word that came to them about the God that loves them and has a plan for them, just bounces off and falls off. So that's why I wanted to talk about how if we don't have that hope, if we don't have a hope in the God that can change our lives, we can put all these other things on and tell all these kids how wonderful things can be with Jesus, but they're not going to get it. Because my goal this morning is to try to put across that the hope is the foundation that we need to have for our relationship with God. So Charlotte's going to talk about what she's been learning about hope over the summer, and then I'm going to talk some more about
Hello. Okay, is that good? Okay. So, like Dawn says, I'm going to be talking about hoping in the Lord, which has been a slow, gradual learning for me all my life, very slowly. When I became a Christian, I had a very difficult time walking out the promises in God's Word. Because of my past, I struggled with self-image issues, probably like a lot of you have, like feeling worthless, useless, unloved, rejected, all those things. So it was very difficult for me to believe that I was God's precious child, his daughter. I knew that his love was real and true, but when it came down to it, when struggles came and difficulties came and my prayers just didn't seem to be answered or even heard, I just figured, well, I probably don't deserve his love. It's okay.